want to save on the most popular PodNuts products, go to our new page at podnuts.com/deals. And while you're there, get on the PodNuts hot list, where you're going to be sent exclusive weekly deals. You're going to get the latest PodNuts news, so you're in the loop.
Hello, welcome to PodNuts Daily, episode number 344. This is the show that we bring computer techs on to talk about their business, little tips and tricks from everybody out there in our little community of PodNuts. We get a lot of different people in here. Usually it's a different person every week. This week, though, we're actually following up from last week's show with Ralph McNabb. He's got so much information he wants to share with us, and I didn't have all of his notes last week, kind of my fault. So anyway, here we are back to finish up or get farther in his notes from last week. And if you missed last week's show, we talked a lot about his managed services job that he does, and then also about documentation and how to keep good notes on everything you're doing in your computer repairs. And today we're going to take it from there and get into some more tips and tricks that Ralph's got for us. So how you doing today, Ralph?
Oh, not too bad. How about yourself?
I'm doing good. Staying really busy. You too?
Yeah, been very busy. I've had a very busy past 3 days. That's for sure.
Cool. That's good.
Actually, it's been all on site work for me in the past 3 days, and I've had a long schedule each day. So Go ahead.
A lot of stuff that you're used to doing on site, or new kind of things that you're into.
A lot of the same. From before, staying pretty consistent, but the past 3 days especially have been very, very tightly packed, and I've had just long schedules, so it's a little bit more heavily loaded than normal, but not too bad overall.
We're sure you can handle it. If they didn't think it was in good hands, they wouldn't have had you doing all that.
I hope so.
So, Ralph, what do you got tonight for us?
Well, I guess if I could just pick up kind of where I left off. The first heading that I have here is regarding documentation. And a lot of people tend to shrug this off quite often, but it really is one of the biggest portions of your business. And, I heard you had said, that one of your clients, you had scribbled something down, just so you wouldn't forget it with the phone setups on your email.
Right.
But, it really is important to keep very detailed notes, very detailed documentation. If you have the time, make diagrams. If anybody has access to Visio, make network diagrams, do whatever you have to maintain, very clear and concise directions of where you might go for any kind of troubleshooting. One of the major things that I had seen, I previously worked for the Geek Squad for about 3.5 years, and this has been a couple of years ago now, but one of the major things that they try and do is maintain documentation of everything that gets checked in for repair. And this is more so geared towards your computer repair shops. But if you don't already do this, you need to make sure that every computer and every extra component, anything that that they drop off with the computer, accessories, whether it be an external hard drive or a power adapter, you need to make a note of that as soon as it comes in, in front of the client when possible, just so that you have everything documented. You know what came in, you know what went out. Nothing gets forgotten. Nothing is left behind. That way, if anybody comes back at you, I brought my power adapter here, and now you didn't give it back to me. Where's my power adapter? You have a record that says, this is what you actually checked in. You signed off on this paperwork. You did not drop off a power adapter, or maybe you did, and maybe I need to find it. But it's very important to keep very detailed documentation of everything at check-in and check-out. Just whether it be protecting yourself or the customer, it definitely helps minimize headaches. I know a lot of people don't tend to do this very often, and it's kind of a bad habit, but it's something that's really easy to forget when you're on site, is using diagnostic software before you do any repairs to the computers. It kind of covers you, just like the documentation of anything being checked in and out does. Let's say you get a computer that comes in for service, and I've seen people skip this step, but they don't test the memory or they don't test the hard drive, and they'll go ahead and, you know, it might be infected with viruses and it might have problems, but they'll go ahead and reload the operating system. They send it back to the client. Client has major issues after they pick it up and they're not sure what's going on. They bring it back, you run a hard drive test on it, or it's gone to a non-booting situation. Well, you know, if you would have scanned it to see if it had a bad hard drive, that's something that you could have corrected before you even gave it back to the customer. And that's also something that you could have potentially upsold them on. But, you know, if it's an after the fact kind of situation, they're not really going to be very likely to purchase a new hard drive from you because they kind of feel like they're being nickeled and dimed. Right.
Right. Yeah. I agree there.
And, but I mean, as you're doing this, the diagnostics on the computer, it's good to have documentation that follows you through the diagnostic steps where you can say, okay, well, I ran this hard drive scan at, 6:50 PM and this is on January 9th, 2012. And, if you keep that record, then, you know, maybe some, I don't know how many people you get asking you for documentation of what you did. But if you have a difficult customer that wants to be very specific, or they want very specific notes, you can show them exactly what you did. Listen, I scanned for a bad hard drive. I scanned the memory to make sure the memory was okay. You know, I found 146 viruses and then I cleaned them up. Well, you have that documentation to provide them with if necessary. But, you know, it's all about covering yourself.
Good ideas, man.
It helps minimize the loss of customers because of just bad situations, or maybe there's bad blood that you could prevent. If you're doing any kind of virus scans, another thing that you could potentially do, depending on what kind of ticketing system or work order system you keep. I don't know if you're maybe some people are going through QuickBooks and they're creating invoices that way, and they don't really keep very many detailed records of anything else. Try and keep log files. Log files are very small. And, you know, if somebody doesn't believe that you removed 146 viruses, you have a log file to prove it. It doesn't take up very much space if you have a server. You know, you can compress those files. You can back them up to an external hard drive or to a NAS device. It's a very simple step that can also save you headaches in the future.
How have you set these? Is that like an Excel spreadsheet? Then if you can fill in the blank or something like that. As far as or do you have actual paper? You know, we're jotting stuff down or fill in the blank on something like that.
There's a couple different ways that you can go about it. You can have, if you really want to spend the money to print these things out, you can have paper logs where you're physically writing things down every time you make a change to something, or you run some scans, or, you know, you clean something up. Or you can actually, if you have maybe Adobe PDF or Adobe Acrobat, you can make a checklist that you can actively change. You can actively type in information. So it's basically just a pre-made form that you have for every customer, and you can rename the title of the document as you save it. You can save it as such and such a client name. If you have a certain work order number that's associated with it, you tag that in the document name, and then, you know, you just fill it out as you go. But what this does for you is it really does two things. It gives you solid proof of exactly what you're doing, but it also lets you know what you've done and what you haven't. And it keeps you on task so that you provide consistent service every single time. So, you know, let's say you have a specific procedure for reloading a computer. You know, you have all those steps documented. You know, you follow each one of them in the same exact order every single time if you follow that document. And as you fill it out, you know where you left off. You know, let's say you have 10 computers that you're working on at a time and you're bouncing back and forth, and some of them might be more difficult to deal with than others, depending on what kind of problems they have. But if you're bouncing back and forth and you're updating your notes as you go along, it's very easy to walk back to that computer 10 hours later and say, you know, what did I do the last time I touched this computer? Well, there it is.
Yeah. So you recommend like a mini laptop going, you keep in front of you, typing your notes in then maybe as you go from 10 different computers? Trying to see how that plays out. Or do you have a piece of paper taped to each one maybe or something to...
A very simple way would just be to have a piece of paper in a folder sitting in front of that computer. Just, you know, have that piece of paper follow that computer as it moves through your bench or into your work completed. If you wanted to get a little more technical, I suppose you could walk around with a netbook or something, having all your documentation on there, and then you back it up daily. Or you could have it synchronized to a place on your network. If you have a server, you could have it synchronized to a shared folder, or you could have it synchronized to a folder on a NAS device. You know, if you have a tablet, maybe let's say you have an iPad and, you know, you have your Adobe, PDF on there and you're editing as you go, you save it to your whatever. And, with an Android device, I mean, you can, there's different applications that you can use. You can save it to Dropbox or something, just something to keep you organized and up to date with all the work that you're doing. Again, it doesn't take much to compress those files, and you can save them wherever, just about, as long as you have them retained for some period of time, maybe whether it be a year, 3 years, 5 years, 7 years, however long you want to keep it for.
Yeah, I mean, if it's a digital, you know, thing like that, and you can compress it, there's nothing holding you back from keeping it forever, you know, until you know exactly. That they threw the computer in the garbage, and then you can throw that file in the garbage, I guess, too.
Exactly.
Yeah, great, good tips, man. Yeah, thanks, Ralph. Because a lot of the stuff I need to get on the ball a little better too, you know. I've started a couple things just like what you're saying, and then mm-hmm. You know, I do have a check-in list when the computer comes in and stuff. But I suppose we could all do a little better job in this area.
Well,
would you have? Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Well, one other thing that it kind of does for you is if you're providing some of this documentation of you know, very detailed documentation of what you're doing to the computers, if you provide that to your clients, that just works wonders in helping convey a very professional image to them. You know, they're going to take you more seriously if you have, you know, hard papers of what you did, and, you know, everything's documented properly, and they can look at that 5 years from now and say, you know, I wonder what that guy's name, I can't think of that guy's name that fixed my computer, or what exactly he did. And they can look at that sheet and say, you know, Bob's computer repair, and this is the computer that was fixed. This is what was checked in with it. This is what was checked out. This is exactly what was what the symptoms were. This is what was fixed. This is the recommendations for the future. It's something that they can keep. It's something that they can look at and say, you know, this guy is really professional. He cares about what he does, and obviously he's got his stuff together.
Yeah. That reminds me, I was on site earlier this week and I actually started doing this with my Android tablet. I started kind of taking notes as I was working on this lady's computer because they didn't want it to leave the house. They didn't want to bring it to the shop. So, you know, I was like, well, I don't really have anything here to do my documentation. So I just brought my Android tablet and I was using my finger to kind of scribble some stuff down, you know, as I went. And, you know, I don't have a way to print it off there, but then I just kind of transfer the highlights of all my notes I took onto their invoice. And then when I took the check, I mailed them the receipt and they can kind of see what I did on there. But it was kind of not quite as professional as, you know, as maybe it could have been, you know, it's kind of chicken scratch and maybe I should get a little better OCR or something to make it into something I could probably read next, you know, a year down the road or something.
Well, even so, without spending a lot of money or on software or whatnot, you know, something simple, Evernote, you can mm-hmm. use Evernote, make a new note for each service call or each repair that you do. You can at least keep your notes in there. It synchronizes to the cloud. You can pull it up on your desktop computer or your tech workstation. You can either print that out as part of your paperwork, or you can have maybe a template for that that you can fill in as you go, or you can copy and paste that into a different application that you use on your desktop. Maybe if you want to just paste it into your invoice somehow.
What do you think about leaving it on the computer of the client too? Have a folder where of repairs so then you can kind of just pick up the computer and like, well, this is what we did then. And
that's one way to do it. I would still keep a copy of it for yourself, right. But definitely, I mean, if they don't want a paper copy, it's very easy to leave them a digital copy.
Sure.
Absolutely.
So, there is one more question in the chat room. And they want to know if you use Level Platforms or Kaseya, or if you care to elaborate on either of that or not.
Well, we've dabbled a little bit in Kaseya. We were testing it for a little while and we had a trial that ran out. We're currently in a transition between software, and that's something that we're gonna be looking at. Well, we've been looking at for the past couple weeks, very, very in depth, and that's still to be determined. We do on the back side of things, we do make some use of Spiceworks. Spiceworks is it's good for what it is. You can't really beat free, but if you're not looking to spend a lot of money and you want to get a help desk running, or you want just some basic ticketing, you can use Spiceworks for both network monitoring, help desk ticketing. You can use it actually for knowledge base articles. There's all kinds of plugins that allow you to manage different networking devices. I don't know if you've dealt at all with the Intel vPro, but vPro isn't exactly easy to deal with unless you have a solution that can handle it. And they have plugins for vPro management. They have help desk plugins, and it's all community based stuff. So if you're not looking to spend a whole lot of money, Spiceworks is a good solution. You just have to have something to load it up on and run as a web server. But that's about it.
Cool. Thanks for answering that question. I think we're going to start on number two of your notes here, future proofing.
Yes, actually, okay. It's taking a little bit of a different direction from the documentation that we talked about. However, future proofing is definitely one of the more important topics, I think. To start off, I would say that, one of the texts a few weeks ago, several weeks ago now, had mentioned about his use of tablets. And I think that's a really big point nowadays, is just familiarizing yourself with the tablets that are out there, their benefits, pros, cons of each, how you can utilize each within your business or even for yourself. There's so much that tablets can do nowadays that, can definitely help you make your business more efficient and make yourself more efficient. But even just in supporting them, you can make a ton just, you know, training and, you know, troubleshooting when end users have problems. You know, more and more people nowadays are getting tablets, just, you know, whether it be a secondary device or, you know, maybe it's their third device. You know, if they have a desktop and a laptop as well, but a lot of people are using them to replace laptops. And you know, if they're just browsing Facebook or they're browsing the web, it's a real great tool for them, checking their email and whatnot. But you know, more and more people are getting them now, that it could potentially be a whole nother market for every computer technician out there to be supporting and troubleshooting these devices, even with repair. I mean, you know, their iPod and iPad repair is huge right now. And there are those out there that are definitely capitalizing on there and making a killing, you know, because there's not a whole lot of people that offer that kind of service right now. And it would definitely be to everyone's advantage to try and hop on that as soon as possible.
Absolutely. Yeah. Just to go back a little bit, do you use a tablet at work, or do you own a tablet?
I'm actually in the market. I'm kind of swinging back and forth between getting an iPad and an Android tablet. I'm kind of waiting for more of the more powerful tablets coming out. I know the Asus just came out with their new Transformer that's a quad core actually, and it looks like a pretty nice device, but I'm going to try and wait until the price comes down a little bit to pick one of those up.
The iPad 3 is just around the corner too.
Yeah.
It's hard to, so see what happens there. I plan in my shop to sell iPad 3s when they come out. I have an Asus Transformer, the original one, myself, and I'll say I like it, and I do find myself using it for work a lot. Mostly what I use it for is taking service manuals on site with me in a PDF format and just going through that way. And it really works really well. And they're very portable. I'll sit there and I'll take some notes when I'm working on it in a note program. Mm-hmm. Maybe I don't go back to them as much as I should, but they're there now, you know?
Okay.
Yeah. I agree. And then iPad repair, I believe. Yeah. We're going to have to be starting to look into that for sure.
Well, as a continuation to what you were saying about using it on site, you know, for those that actually do provide business support, the tablets, both Android and the iPad, offer a lot of great apps out there for network management, network monitoring, remote access to servers, and you know, remote access to workstations. So it makes it very, very easy to be a tech on the go, actually supporting, you know, anywhere from consumers to business users. And, you know, with the 3G tablets that they have nowadays, you know, you don't get a lot of data, but the couple times a month that you might use it, or even a couple times a week that you might use it to support somebody remotely, it's definitely worth the cost. But, I mean, there's so much to be said about that. I don't know. We could, you know, just between the Android App Addicts, I'm sure they've probably got more than enough to talk about on there, just to, as far as networking apps and whatnot.
But yeah, I know Doors brought up a few of them, networking apps and things before. Mm-hmm. Steve, I'll speak for Steve. Steve and I are just going to sit there and we're going to be like, what's he? I don't know what all these numbers are, but it looks good to him and he knows what they are.
Yeah.
I did actually just this week get my first call on a tech support for, I don't know if you call it a tablet, it was it was an Android device, a Pan Digital e-reader of some sort. Lady called up and she said it was locked up. It wouldn't do nothing, you know. And, you know, like an Android phone, you could pull the battery. Well, there's no way to get to the battery in this device. So I just told her, you know, volume up and the power button at the same time. Just give that a try. And she did, and that fixed it. So I'm like, rebooted. So I figured, you know, that's just an easy, an easy tip. If your tablet's locked up, you can always try that first and see what happens. That's, that seems like to be the general reset if there's no reset button on it.
Yep. Yep. And, you know, kind of turning directions a little bit, but staying within the future-proofing topic, you know, I mentioned a little bit about server and network support. You know, if you don't already, definitely look into supporting servers and Cisco networks. It's, you know, it's, there's so much of it out there. And if you really want to have a stable business and you're looking to get into maintenance contracts and whatnot, that's a clear way to go. You know, servers really allow you to charge a premium for your services, just because, you know, there's not a whole lot of people that are able to support it, outside of, you know, everyday systems admins, that have a full-time job working at a major corporation or an enterprise. You know, everybody's trying to get certifications, but not everybody that's out there trying to get certifications really knows what they're doing. So if you have the knowledge and you have the skills, definitely look into it.
Is there a way that you could learn to do that without getting certification? Is that something you could just, you know, load SQL, you know, some kind of server on a couple extra computers you have and fumble through it?
Well, or, I mean, yes and no. There's certain topics that you can learn up just by, you know, testing it out, looking at some of the information that they have on TechNet. You do have to have a basic understanding of the server operating system, about networking and whatnot. But there's tons of great books out there that you can check out just to learn the basics. But even if you don't necessarily want to spend the money or shell out the money for the exams, you can pick up the books for some of the certifications. If you want to learn a lot of the basic networking principles, pick up a book about the CompTIA Network Plus certification. You know, you can pick up, I'm trying to think. Well, I mean, there's all kinds of books out there as far as the MCSC is concerned. Now the MCITP, which is the newer version of that, that certification, it's moving more towards a systems admin and an enterprise administrator certification. But, you know, just see if you can find the topics online, do a lot of reading, maybe join a forum that has a lot to do with networking. You know, Experts Exchange has tons of information about networking. If you end up that you can purchase a device just to play around with, let's say you want to learn some Cisco networking. So you pick up a Cisco PIX firewall that's a little outdated, but, you know, it has a current iOS and you can hook it up and play with it a little bit. You can always look at Cisco's website. They have guides, how-to guides that actually walk you through configuring these devices from, you know, A to Z. And they have all kinds of they have lists of their commands online. If you want to find a basic firewall configuration, they have a complete configuration that you can find on their website. So, I mean, the information is out there. You just have to find it. But, you know, for those of you that are looking to get certified, I would definitely at least look to get your MCP in, you know, Windows 7 or you know, Windows Server or something, something beneficial anyways. And, you know, for those of you that are interested in networking, I would look into any kind of CCNA programs that you can find for Cisco networking. CCNP is really the higher level past the CCNA, but they also offer CCNA security, which is a more in-depth CCNA course that has a more specific focus. But, you know, CCNA to start is a good place, because there's, even if, you know, if you want to do more than just your on the side computer network or computer technician work, or you know, maybe you're looking to partner up with somebody in another business, the CCNA is great. I mean, the knowledge that you get from it is good enough to get you into the iOS. It teaches you how to be familiar with the iOS. It's basically most of the devices you can go either through a command line or a GUI now. And, you know, the GUI is more popular with I think, some of the beginners, just because it's very easy to visualize things and you know, troubleshoot and whatnot. But I think most of the diehards will, you know, tend to stick to the command line interface. And, you know, it's preference, really, just personal preference. But
If you learn your Cisco and your Microsoft, well, you think that's going to translate over for, say you get on site and, or a customer of yours has Linux, you're going to get your foundation and those kind of things. You're not going to be surprised by a whole lot what you see once you learn that side, do you think?
Well, Linux is a totally different world. I don't actually deal a lot with Linux, with the clients that we have. In fact, you had mentioned last week about a client that had an old box that was just stored away in a closet. Well, right. we had a client that had something similar where they previously had somebody else supporting them, and whoever it was just a diehard Linux fan, and they insisted on using a Linux server for I forget what it was, but you know, when we got on site, nobody knew exactly what it was or what it was doing, and they started having issues with the box, and you know, it was just a scramble to figure out what was going on, and we ended up having to replace it with a Windows box. I wish I could remember what it was for, but you know, unless you really know Linux and you know you're all into shell scripting and whatnot, I don't think you're really going to find a lot of that in small business. You know, I have friends, actually I have a friend that works for, Domino's IT in Ann Arbor, Michigan here. And, you know, he says the Linux guys that he knows are, you know, they're all about Linux. They know it inside and out, and, they're, one of few really that do that, and they make a lot of money because of it. So, I mean, if you really want to get into that field, it's definitely a moneymaker, because there's not a ton of people that know it inside and out. And if you do, you're at an advantage, but, you're really not going to find a whole lot of that in small business. I would imagine that, most of the servers that you find that are Linux based, are going to be actually put in there by somebody that knows Linux and, you know, they like Linux for whatever reason. I mean, don't get me wrong. Linux is awesome. It's free. There's the possibilities with it are practically endless, but, you know, it's not always practical for those that aren't familiar with it.
Yeah.
You know, moving on a little bit, One great way to kind of advance your business nowadays is focusing on cloud computing. We talked a little bit about hosted SharePoint, hosted Exchange. That's one way to go. But trying to implement these plans within businesses that you can support, you know, whether it be migrating them away from a traditional server on site, or simply just taking a load off of a server that they have just to kind of extend the usable life of what they've purchased. It can definitely benefit somebody because they always have the latest software. Any, you know, security vulnerabilities are patched, you know, as soon as, whoever's hosting it does. So, there are obvious benefits to it, but there are, you know, there's cons to having cloud computing services. Obviously, if your internet connection drops, you lose access to those services. But you know, whether you're providing the service or you're simply providing a service to set them up with these software solutions, there's definitely money to be made there. But in my opinion, most of the stuff is migrating to the cloud. There's a lot of people that are cloud computing advocates, and Microsoft, everything at Microsoft right now is virtualized. In their own data centers, they're virtualizing everything they possibly can. Everything's running Hyper-Vs because data recovery and, you know, disaster recovery is exceedingly simple. They just, you have a VHD and, you know, you back up the VHD. If the hardware goes bad, you can literally take that VHD and put it on any hardware that's in your rack. And, it helps minimize downtime, but, in not having to troubleshoot a server for very critical applications, that can save you a lot of headaches. However, it would definitely pay to try and increase your skills in network troubleshooting. Kind of going back to the CCNA or the Network Plus, I would say probably 60% of the issues that I deal with are networking related, whether it be, you know, an issue on the client side or on the hardware side of the network, or even layer one, the physical cabling. I've had cabling issues recently, actually. We had a VoIP phone that was connecting to the server over a VPN, and the VoIP phone kept losing its connection. Well, come to find out, the tab on the RJ45 connector had actually broken off, so the cable was actually sliding in and out of the firewall. So, you know, things like that happen, but maybe it's a cable that gets snagged, and you just kind of have to know that those things are out there, and you have to start from step one, really. But
don't skip over the simple stuff.
Yeah, it's the simple stuff that gets you, because you can easily spend 45 minutes troubleshooting an issue that you think might be software related, where it's actually, you know, somebody stepped on the cable and it got yanked out of the computer. You know, it's very easy to skip over the simple stuff, but it's the simple stuff that'll save you time.
Hey, Ralph, if we could go back to the cloud computing, when you were saying offerings for cloud computing, are you talking Microsoft 365 or like other things that you would offer yourself?
It's a very, very broad topic, but Microsoft 365 is one way to go. If you want to, or if you have the possibility of hosting a server for someone, or even, you know, hosting Exchange or SharePoint for your clients. I know anypc.com or anypcservice.com, I believe it is.
Leaf,
yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. He offers the online data backup service, where he's actually rebranding a service that's already out there that's working, right, and they have a complete solution already, and he's making money on it. It's a great solution, and it definitely works for him. So, I mean, looking for those kind of niche offerings is definitely a good way to make money.
Yeah, I do that myself, honestly, through a company that I found through ACRBO. It works really well. They did all the rebranding for me, and that's nice.
Yeah, I mean, if it's out there, it'll save you time, it'll save you money, and it'll make you money in the process. Moving on a little bit, though, my next topic here is business hardware and software. One major point that I would make is that you should always use what you support. It definitely gives positive reinforcement for the clients that you have. If you are using, let's say you're using a really nice Asus laptop, and you're trying to sell somebody an Apple, well, it doesn't really give you a whole lot of positive reinforcement that you may actually, you know, appreciate Apple or necessarily know how to use it if you're, you know, using an Asus yourself. If you're trying to sell Apple, then it's probably a good idea to use an Apple. If you're trying to push, you know, Dells and HPs, it's a great idea to use a Dell or an HP. It definitely shows that you really stand by the products that you sell. It also allows you to be very familiar with the products that you sell, as far as any known issues, service bulletins. It definitely helps making repairs faster. You familiarize yourself with what you're using, and you know, if you have an issue, chances are somebody else might have a similar issue with the same hardware. So, you know, if you figure it out for yourself, you'll know how to fix it when the time comes around that you have a client that has that problem. And using those products, though, it's definitely a great idea to make use of the manufacturer's diagnostics whenever possible. One great point there is that they're free. they come with the product, so you might as well use them. If you are having, let's say you're having a problem with a Dell laptop that, you know, Dell includes their own diagnostics, and you think it might have a bad hard drive, but, you know, maybe you use DFT or another program to test hard drives, but you're also having a problem with the optical drive. Well, you know, your built-in diagnostics there will run the hard drive test for you. It'll test out the CD drive as well. And, you know, it'll make your job easier. Another point is actually that the included diagnostics with some of the software with some of these products is generally better than a lot of the third-party tools that you can get, because it's hardware specific. So, you know, if you're going to use a Western Digital Data Lifeguard diagnostic CD on a Seagate drive, chances are, you know, you might have some issues if you get an error message. But if you're using it with a Western Digital drive, you know, it knows the firmware, it knows the drives, and it'll give you manufacturer specific error codes. I had that problem once, actually with a Western Digital hard drive, where it threw up a code that really didn't mean a whole lot, but you know, all you needed to do is just run a check disk and that was it, or something. It's just something simple, you know, but
just the fact that it gave you something to go off of that you wouldn't have got off of some other program.
Exactly. Exactly. One point there, is that the Dell diagnostics, I had actually received this from this tip from the Geek Squad when I worked there. I'd asked the corporate support line about the Dell diagnostics versus some of the other diagnostics tools that we had in the shop. And obviously those other diagnostics tools are provided by the Geek Squad, but their response was that they found that the Dell diagnostics tools were actually more in-depth than the third party tools that you can use on the drive. I think my video froze.
Oh, hold on just a second.
Oh, sorry.
Okay. We got you back.
Oh, sorry. What was the last thing you heard there?
Where the Geek Squad people were saying that Dell Diagnostics, and that's about as far as we got. You didn't finish.
Oh, sorry about that. The Dell diagnostics tools they found were actually more in depth than some of the other third party tools that we had access to, and you know, it was mainly in the system diagnostics of the system board and whatnot, because they're made for the system board, right? And you know, they know the hardware, they know the firmware, and you know, if it's a firmware related issue, they can tell that. But, you know, going on a little bit, kind of going back to Linux, you know, if you're a fan of Linux and you're familiar with it, I would recommend to use it whenever possible in your own business. It helps you keep your workstations virus free and secure. A lot of times I've had issues where, you know, I'm trying to recover data from a hard drive, and it's just easier to do it from a Linux boot CD or a Linux install. It generally, you know, offers a great platform for performing backups and manual repairs. Now a lot of people tend to use pre-installed versions or pre-built versions of bootable Windows XP or you know, other standalone tools, but for that I tend to prefer Linux, just because, you know, if you have a virus that's Windows related and you're trying to use a Windows PE, you might have some issues there, but you know, you're not going to have the same issues if you were to use a Linux boot CD. I know it sounds kind of funny, but I've used Puppy Linux a lot in the past, and it's a very lightweight bootable Linux CD, and you know, it just runs very fast on pretty much any hardware. But you know, if you can use Linux and you're familiar enough with it to use it on your own systems, I would do that just to save yourself some money.
And if you're not real familiar with it, just make yourself an ISO and a bootable DVD or CD of even Ubuntu, something that's, you know, very GUI for you. In fact, I just used one the other, it was last week or the week before. I had a machine that the internet connection wasn't working on. But then, you know, so I threw in the Linux distro just to see if it would work in there, to find out if it was the hardware or if it was a Windows issue. And with the Ubuntu distro, it had the right driver for the wireless card in there and everything. It came right up, no problems, you know. And then so I knew that there was something in Windows causing it, and it wasn't the hardware, it wasn't the modem or anything like that.
Yeah, that's actually a great idea, especially for the networking portion of it. It's a great way to test out your networking hardware. I know in the past they've had, well, I've had issues in the past with Ubuntu and wireless drivers, but they've come a long way recently. And it's, you know, user base is increasing, so it definitely helps make it easy for you. You know, switching gears a little bit, my next topic here is actually focusing on building relationships. You know, this is something that often gets overlooked, but, you know, this, even if it costs you money now, it'll make you money in the long run. You know, you spend a little extra time with your clients, it allows you to actually upsell, while the scans are running. That's a major thing. You know, if you're an on-site tech and you're there for 3 hours running virus scans, the perfect time to talk to them is when those scans are running. You know, you can find out a little bit about their usage habits. You can find a little bit about what they do on their computer, who uses a computer. You can find a little bit more about the technology that they use in their home. You can offer more services as far as supporting that other hardware. You can offer them training on hardware that they have in their home. You know, it's a great way to talk about your business and kind of familiarize themselves with your business while you're there. Plus, not only that, it looks a lot better that you're taking the time to talk to them and try and educate them rather than just sitting there watching the scans run. You know, it doesn't look too professional if you're just sitting there watching scans run and it makes for a little bit of awkward silence.
Right. Yeah. Don't play with your phone while you're watching the scans run either. Just talk to the people, you know, listen to them.
Yeah. If they get familiar with you, they're more apt to actually bring you back on site for service in the future. Yep. You know, it's a great way to find out if they have any friends actually that have any computer issues. You know, you can hand them some business cards and try and promote your business that way. But the biggest thing that you need to do is to learn to differentiate between building relationships and wasting your time with a cheap client. Because there's always going to be that person that's trying to push you out of their house as soon as possible. And that can cause issues. I know on one of the Pod Nuts daily episodes a little while back, one of the guys was talking about a client that they lost just because they didn't run a defrag.
Right.
And, you know, it's a simple thing. And he did actually, in his defense, he did actually offer it to her, but she was, she was in a hurry to push them out. And I would imagine it's probably just because she didn't want to pay the hourly rate. But, you know, I wouldn't spend your time trying to promote your business with a cheap client that's not going to be any more likely to, be a repeat customer. Not only that, but there's a lot of tire kickers out there.
So I got kind of a story that goes with building relationships. Just today, I stopped at a former client, well, a current client, I guess. This guy called me a couple of weeks back, and he owns a candle factory, and I'd been there. I fixed good smelling computers come from a candle factory too. You know, sometimes you'll get a smoker's computer or a nasty computer.
Yeah.
And if you can work at a candle factory's computer, that's nice. So he calls me a few weeks back and says he's got an IBM that's just running slow and stuff. And so this is a couple towns over, and I happen to have to go there today to quote another computer job that they wanted me to look at the computer. And it turned out I'm ordering them up a new laptop and stuff for that job. But on my way back, I stopped by this candle factory because this town, you know, it's probably a 15-minute drive for me. And I thought, and I've had this in the back of my head, that maybe I could use another local business there as a drop-off point for customers. If I could, you know, save them the drive all the way into my town, they could just drop it off. I give this guy $5 to hold it until, and he's got a secure place. It's a candle factory, you know, it's pretty good. But anyway, so I'm talking to him, you know, about this. And then I end up actually going back to his house and grabbing this IBM that he had called me a couple of weeks ago and kind of forgot about. So I got that job out of it too. Just hitting, you know, that on the way back. But then, you know, I spent a good half hour, 45 minutes. He gave me some free candles to try out at home, you know, and it's a nice guy, you know, it's really cool, you know, and business is helping out business. I'll probably end up fixing his computer for nothing just now that, you know, he's going to let me put a sign in his yard. That's, you know, another town over, you know, and put a little sign, say drop off spot or, you know, or something like that. You know, it's good to build business relationships as well as personal ones when in your home users. I mean, I don't know. I think I build up a pretty good rapport with a home user. With all of them, hopefully, they usually come back, and they I do get almost all of my advertising is from referrals. So, those little times count. You know, if you're a personable person, it makes it easier. I sold cars for 12 years, so I can talk to people fairly easily. Mm. And it'll work on that. If you have a problem talking to people, just work on it. Just try it. They're probably just as nervous talking to you as you are to them. It's not a big deal.
Yeah. But that's actually a really great, example, because that just gives you a really great way to expand the reach of your business. Because you know, those customers that maybe even there's, customers that drive, 15 minutes just to the drop-off point. Maybe they live a half hour away from your business. They'll drive 15 minutes into the drop-off point and, you know, you can pick it up from there. And that's another customer that you might not have gotten if they had to drive a whole half hour to get to you.
Right. Yeah. That's a good point. I didn't really even think of that.
That's a great way to expand the reach of your business. But, you know, there's always tire kickers though too. So, I mean, for, those technicians that have shops, you know, you'll always get somebody that walks in and, you know, they're kind of putzing around. They're asking about prices and, you know, they don't really want to spend a whole lot of money, so they probably end up taking it to their friend George or something that knows nothing about computers but says he can fix a virus. But you know, you have to kind of try and fend off the tire kickers as much as you can. But there's also going to be a lot of people that you really just can't please. You know, nothing that you do is good enough for them, and you know, at some point you have to kind of know when to let go and. There's a really great article about that on Technible that was about knowing when to fire your clients. And, you know, it's a really great point. But in the long run, those type of clients that they're always going to try and get something for free from you and nothing's really ever good enough, they're really just going to cost you money in the end, because spending 4 hours to troubleshoot something that they're not going to really pay you a whole lot to do might actually prevent you from getting another two jobs that you would have otherwise gotten. and made at least twice as much on it, you know. But
yeah, I could say there's only been one customer that I've fired so far, and you know, it was kind of a mutual firing. Neither of us were gonna win, so it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, you have to realize or know how to realize when you're in that situation. But you know, we can differentiate between home PC users and business clients. You know, just in the way that they use technology, the types of technology that they use. You know, and I talked to Steve about this a little while back about hidden needs, and this was back in August when I was on the show. And you know, with home PC users, you know, when you're in their home and you're talking to them as the scans are running, and you're talking to them about their other technology, this is a really great point. You need to discover their hidden needs, things that they don't even know that they might need. Let's, for example, somebody has a digital camera and maybe they haven't touched it in a year because they really just don't know how to use it. And, you know, maybe they don't know how to import pictures onto their computer, or they don't really know how to use the camera to begin with. You know, they don't know how to take pictures. If that's a skill that you have, obviously you can provide a service for them. There's, you know, there's all sorts of things that you can do as far as training goes. You know, if it's just one-on-one time and they have questions for you, that's another way to go. It's basically just getting yourself FaceTime with the customer in the home, and it's going to earn you money in the long run. But even if there's nobody that has virus removals to be done in the week that you're running a little slow, but there might be five people that want trainings on how to use the computer. If you can, you know, I know a lot of businesses try to get out into the community and advertise to seniors as far as training them on how to use the computer, how to use the internet. That's a great way to expand your business. If you can find, even maybe like the city council can kind of promote your business within their meetings. If you can get something like that, maybe they can, actually promote you offering the training to seniors in the area. Or posting flyers for training classes. If you charge $20 an hour for a training class, and you get five people, you know, a couple hours later, you're doing pretty good.
But, yeah. I know that some libraries, they get grants to have computer training for people too. And if you can get a hold of your librarians, they are always starving for people to teach these classes. Honestly, if they don't find someone in the community to teach them, or a computer tech like yourself, they're going to end up going to the community college or a school and hiring a teacher to do it. Mm. And honestly, you'll benefit by doing it. I mean, if you're comfortable public speaking, you got to come up with a curriculum and things like this.
Yep.
And also, you know, you might learn sometimes we might overlook some of the things that the normal people are actually having problems with, and you're going to see these. So the next time you're not surprised when somebody asks you a certain question, because you might've seen that before. But then also I think as a computer tech, you might do a better job at explaining some of the stuff in a computer than a teacher would too. The guy's probably usually, you know, maybe a network teacher or something, and you don't need to be, I don't know. They might just kind of shoot over the people when you could be more of a common ground with them, you know, and not talk too much technology too far over the head. Tell them how to set up an email account, just like you would on site. You know, you go to people's houses, you're setting up Gmail accounts for them, getting them hooked up with Google Plus, Facebook. And it's basically the exact same stuff, only you're doing it for a group, you know?
Well, not only that, but it kind of gives you a little bit of an insight into the kind of concerns that an everyday user might have regarding the computer or even technology that they have. Let's say you're teaching a course like that, and you have an audience that ranges between 40 and 65 years old. you know, some, let's say one of the users might have a computer at home and they're really just interested in connecting it to the computer, connecting it to the TV so that they can check their email on the TV, or they want to play games or something on the TV. Well, I mean, if they have that question, you can either address it with them then, or you can offer up a business card and offer to do it in home for them. You know, you can always extend those courses beyond just the classroom there, and you know, offer up your services in home. It kind of gets your foot in the door, because if they're already unfamiliar with the computer, you're just giving them the basics. Chances are they're going to want to know more as soon as they know what you have to tell them. But
yeah, and if they're going to go like to Radio Shack or Staples and look for the device that's going to transfer their video signal from a computer to their television, yep, it'd be a lot easier if you just showed up with one, and they're going to really appreciate that too, because, you know, yep, having to deal with the sales clerks who aren't sure, some, you know, a lot of times the people that work at those places, it's technology stores, but sometimes they're just not very technical people. You know, they're cashiers sometimes, and sometimes you get some good ones. So don't get me wrong. I do like my Radio Shack people. There's some good ones there for sure.
But one of the big ones with home users is that it's just really just connecting the computer to the TV. I know I saw this a lot when I worked at Best Buy, and you know, it's easy money, because it's very simple for you to do, because you know how to do it. You know, it's quick. You can have a set price for it. Maybe you charge $50 to connect a computer to a TV, and you know, you're in, you're out in 20 minutes. It's great money, but just about everybody secretly really wants to do it, because, you know, there's a certain group of people that don't really know how to use the technology, but they really want a TV that's a 50 or a 65 inch TV so they can put it up on their wall and it looks beautiful. But, you know, now they want to hook up their computer to it because it gives them just something really awesome and huge to look at their computer on and check their email. Even if they want to putz around on Facebook, you know, lots of people want to do it, and you can make a killing just hooking it up for them. But, yeah.
Then once you get in their basement and you see their setup, you can determine whether they're going to afford the Harmony, you know, one remote that you got, you know, to sell them to, that turns their computer and everything on with one button. And that's a whole other thing there too. I really would like to expand into that too, because I really think that there's a lot of people struggling with five remotes and get confused when they get so much stuff hooked up. But yeah, those Harmonies are nice.
Yeah, because then you expand into the home theater, because you've already hooked up their computer to the TV. Now they want to learn how to use it. They want to learn more about the stereo system that they just bought. You can, you know, the Geek Squad offers all these kind of services, but you can too. I mean, they're making money on it. Why can't you? It's you know, people will pay a lot of money for a good home theater system, and they don't want to do that if they don't have anybody to hook it up for them and show them how to use it. They just want to start watching movies and have it be awesome, but they can't do that if they don't know how to hook it up. That's where you come in.
But yeah. And so far, you know, right now, I suppose it's okay. Xbox has come a long way with content, you know, and things like that. Maybe it'll be a lot more simpler sooner, but right now it's still not really super simple. I remember hooking up TVs to Pentium 2s, and it was a whole different thing back then. I wish somebody would have showed me how to do that. I probably spent a month trying to get my first, you know, thing working like that. It was crazy. And, you know, and then the video quality was always horrible, you know, back then.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you got 10 gigabyte hard drive and everything's slow. And
yep.
Yeah, it was fun.
But then, let's say you're at a business client of yours. You can talk to them about their home technology needs. You know, it's just a conversation piece. If you're on your way out the door and you're like, oh, well, especially if you've built a relationship with this client, you know, you can show them a picture of your home setup and say, hey, look what I just bought. And they're like, oh yeah, you know, I've been wanting to get a TV like that. Or I've wanted to get a home theater system like that for a long time, but I don't know how to hook it up. Oh, well, you know, that's when you offer your services. You know, if you're just looking at their business, you can develop if you're familiar enough with the industry anyways, you can develop ways for them to streamline their business, streamline their workflow. I know a lot of medical clients are trying to do that nowadays with all the regulations and rules that the government's imposing, but you know, streamlining their workflow is going to make them money, and it's going to make you money, because the more profitable they are, the more profitable you're going to be as their workflow increases. You know, if they streamline their workflow, they can become more busy themselves, and then, you know, their technology requirements increase, and you're there to support that.
What kind of examples do you think of when you say streamline their workflow? What kind of things?
Actually, I've talked to a couple different clients that utilize cloud services just because it's great for collaboration. There's no waiting on one person. You know, communication is extremely quick, and therefore they're able to get more work done. You know, whether it be Dropbox or hosted email services or whatnot. The more that they can do to minimize the amount of time that they have to wait on communication, if they can increase their turnaround time, depending on the industry, obviously, if they can increase their turnaround time, they can do more work. They can take on more clients. The more clients they take on, the busier, obviously, they're going to get. But then you can start offering more technology services, whether it be cloud services or, you know, more hardware, newer hardware. And then you start supporting them on tablets. You know, that kind of goes back to familiarizing yourself with the different hardware. The more familiar you are with mobile technology nowadays, the more profitable you're going to be, because there's so many people that are trying to implement mobile technology. And if you don't know how to support it, chances are they're probably not going to be a client of yours for very long, because right. You know, if they don't know how to use it, they need to find somebody that does real quick.
Yeah. And the cell phone company is not going to be the one usually to help them out there either. And, you know, they'll sell them the cell phone and they'll say, here you go. But then they get it back and they're like, well, this don't do my email.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. But, you know, the more you familiarize yourself with that equipment, and the more you familiarize yourself with their business, actually, the more you're going to become their one-stop shop.
Yeah. Yep.
And in the end, that's really what you want to do.
To go back with it too. Also, when you're talking to some of the people, you might be able to pick up where someone has left off a lot of times too, where they have maybe had somebody come set something up and it doesn't quite work right. Just by talking to them there, you can kind of, you know, clean up the pieces, you know, of left behind parts, and bring it all together as one. And you can, you know, if you're the one person who brings it all together for them, rather than having this little broken part over here that Joe did, you know, that they've never really used now because it kind of works, but nobody likes to touch it. And right. You know, if you can be, you know, if you can take care of all that, man, you're like super guy.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly.
I'm sorry.
Exactly.
Go ahead.
Yeah. But, I mean, the more dependent that they become on technology and the more that you can support them, through all of that, the more they're going to depend on you. And that's in the end, that's really what you want, because then they're going to be a good client of yours. You know, you're always going to support them and they're always going to pay your bills.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is kind of going sideways a little bit to my next topic here, is just talking about virus removals. And this plays into a lot of different topics that, you know, I'm sure we could go on for hours and hours about, but virus removals. Oh, sorry.
I just had a quick question. Now, you said you worked at the Geek Squad. Did they have certain virus removal tools that you could use and certain ones you couldn't, or did you kind of take things to yourself on how you went about removals at a big corporation type tech place like that?
For licensing reasons, they were extremely strict about what we could use. They developed actually their own offering of software. It's just a big compilation of software that they had that, you know, if we needed to fix a computer, that's what we used. So, you know, if it wasn't on that disk, essentially we couldn't use it. You know, of course, the last result is to just nuke and pave, but
does that happen a lot in a place in an environment like that?
Well, yes and no, depending on the situation. As far as virus removals are concerned, I did see that a lot. If the client didn't have any important data that they needed to save, it was the easiest route, just because, you know, you can sit there watching scans run for hours, or you can just reload it. You know, yeah. starting from scratch is always the safest route. But, you know, if they have important data, then you have to seek alternative routes. But they were very, very strict about what we could use.
I guess, you know, this is kind of a box that maybe I put myself in, or we as techs put ourselves in, you know, and we kind of look at the nuke and pave as being the easy way around it. And we are craftsmen, you know, we've got a talent here that we don't have, that we're not going to just do that. We're going to fight these viruses and win, right. You know, I don't know. Maybe we shouldn't loosen up a little bit, but I don't think so.
Well, I mean, it's not always the best route. Because especially with a lot of the virus infections that you find nowadays, if I were to give anybody advice about virus removals, I would say familiarize yourself with the Windows registry as much as possible. Familiarize yourself with the structure of Windows as much as possible. You know, whether it be folder structure or the actual structure of the operating system, the way that it operates, the more that you can focus on manual removals, the more efficient that you're going to be. You know, if you know the ins and outs of the operating systems, you can generally fix a virus removal pretty quick. Generally, what I find is that the virus removals that I encounter are very localized. They're located in the user profiles. Nowadays, though, you do find a lot more rootkits. Especially in the MBR, and you know, TDSS Killer is a great tool. I know if you look on internet forums, they use GMER a lot. GMER, I believe. That's a big one, but I use TDSS Killer a lot, and usually that does the trick for a lot of them. You know, if you don't necessarily want to babysit the system a lot, you can either focus on bootable virus CDs to run offline scans, or you can run online scans through the web browser. Generally, as a last resort, if I'm still having an issue after I've you know, manually removed some viruses and done a couple good scans, and I'll just go online and run some online scans just to be sure. You know, Panda has their active scan online. There's tools that you can download from Trend Micro. You can get the Norton Power Eraser. I don't really know how good that one is, but you know, I know a lot of people like to use bootable virus CDs right off the bat. You know, they don't even want to mess with a manual removal. They'll just shut down the computer, reboot it, put in a bootable virus CD, run some scans, walk away from it, come back a couple hours later, and, you know, clean up the registry after that, you know, remove any startup entries that it may have missed in the scans, you know, run updates and generally clean up the system. And it's a great way to go if you have the time, but usually if you're providing remote support or you're on site, it's not necessarily a great way to go. You know, just because it takes so long. Myself, sure. I tend to make use of Hijack This a lot. I use auto runs and some of the other sysinternals tools. For some of the really nasty infections, I use ComboFix. It just, some people might put it down. Some people, you know, they're all about it, but I've never seen it not work.
Was it Camofix?
Yep.
Yeah. I use it sometimes, you know, I can't say it's my go-to tool, it seems to work when I've used it.
It's not a great program to use as your go-to. You should really rely on your own knowledge, but for some of the really nasty infections, it's a great, great tool to use. You really have to be familiar with it. They don't have any official support online for it, for very, very obvious reasons. But, if you're part of an internet community that provides, malware removal training, they do, that's not something that they encourage to use for your own, monetary gain. But, if you can familiarize yourself with it or learn how to use it properly, then it is a good tool. As far as the bootable virus removal CDs go, I don't have a whole lot of recommendations. I tend to use Bitdefender and eScan. Recently, Microsoft released their standalone system sweeper beta. And that's really great for finding rootkits, actually. But I've seen it actually make a lot of unbootable systems now bootable. And if you haven't seen it, check it out. It's free. Obviously it's in the beta stages. I don't think that they know whether or not they're going to release a corporate version or a commercial version of it, but, use it while you can. I don't know if anybody really has any recommendations as far as the bootable virus removal CDs go, but, for some of the unbootable systems, it does help. Kind of going back to the documentation piece that I had, it's definitely important to develop a consistent documented routine. If you have a shop and you're going to spend a couple hours on virus removals, I would document it so that you have a good process to go through so that, you're very consistent in your work. And, it's something that any tech could follow. So if you have a shop and you have three or four techs, everybody knows what's going on. You can leave it, and 5 hours later, somebody else come back to it, and they'll know exactly where you left off. If you're trying to run a business with other techs working for you, definitely the business should be able to run itself and deliver consistent service, whether or not you're there. Just documentation is highly important in that kind of company. I don't know if I could really stress that enough.
Yeah, and that way you're not reinventing the wheel every time you get a new virus in too. Exactly. Every now and then I'll hear of a new tool and I want to use it, but then,
you're spending more time trying to learn the tool.
Right.
You don't want to spend all your time trying to learn the software. Just use what you know. Use what you know works. And, use the heck out of it.
Get it done.
It'll help you be more efficient. And, it'll actually increase your turnaround. And, it's all about making money. It'll make you more money. If you can crank out 45 computers in 2 days, then, you're going to make more money than the guy that can only do 15.
Right. Yep. Yeah. But, do you recommend maybe getting a page printed out of your workflow and just check it off as you go, right on each computer or even a digital copy that, goes with each job. Yep.
Yep. It's a great way to go. Wow. But that's actually all I had.
A lot of good tips, man. That's a lot jammed into a show. Yeah. This is the kind of podcast show, this particular episode, where you're going to have to rewind and man, what was that he said again? That's the beauty of podcasts. It's not live radio. Everybody didn't just listen to it and in one ear out the other. They can actually go back and take it in if they come across something and wow, I think I remember hearing that. That's what I love about podcasting. It's not, it's always there.
Yep.
And Ralph McNabb, do you have any Google Plus page or anything that people could get a hold of you if they want to say, give you a shout out or say hey or anything? Facebook, anything like that?
Really, the best I could do is my Twitter. It's just R McNabb at Twitter there. R, M as in Mary, C, N as in Nancy, A, B as in boy, B as in boy. And, you know, you can follow me on Twitter, give me a response or something, and I'll see it. But I don't really do a whole lot with social networking as far as that goes. I don't have the time.
Well, let Ralph know when you use one of his tips. Ralph, you got time for an email?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. We got one email tonight, and this one is from James, and says, I recently had an Asus K60i laptop in that had a bad hard drive. I swapped it, no problem. But while the case was off, I noticed that there was only one stick of RAM on the bottom of this board. Not entirely unusual, but I hadn't seen a laptop this new set up like that. So then I looked under the keyboard, but didn't see anything there either. Then I then removed the one stick and saw what looked like a little NAND chips like you would see on RAM soldered onto the motherboard. I decided to leave this stick out and booted the laptop. Sure enough, it said there was 2 gigs of RAM. So either they hid the second RAM stick somewhere I could not find, or this is the first motherboard I've ever seen with built-in memory. Have you ever seen such a setup? Thanks for all the great shows and keep up the good work. That's from James Beck, and he's the owner of Epic Technologies LLC. So I have, maybe those NAND chips were actually the memory that you're talking that was missing that you couldn't find. I would think that the memory would be in the same spot on the motherboard. And I have seen, and I don't remember what kind of laptop it was, another laptop that had an empty memory spot that came shipped, I think shipped with 2 gigs, but one stick of 2 gigs, not 2 gigabytes. Well, what do you think, Ralph? Have you seen that before?
I've not actually personally seen that before. I've seen a lot of Dell systems particularly that, they'll have one slot on the bottom and then another under the keyboard. Can't imagine that would be a really great design, because if that memory goes bad, you're going to have some issues, including non-booting issues and random blue screens. That can be a huge warranty problem. That's definitely a great tip for anybody to keep their eyes out for. But that might leave some technicians puzzled.
Yeah, memory does go bad, and if it's not the piece that you popped out to test, that could be it might have you going for a while.
Yeah, that might be a new motherboard right there.
Oh wow, yeah. Well, if anybody has any ideas, let us know on that. And anybody else has any questions and they want to have us read them on the show, they can send us an email at mail.podnuts.com. We also have a voicemail set up. If you wanted to have your question answered, you can just leave a voicemail on our phone number. It's 7076 Podnut. Just call that number, leave your message, and we'll play it on the air and answer your question, hopefully. All right, Ralph. Well, hey, thanks, man, for coming back for the round two of your information.
Oh, absolutely. It was a pleasure.
It was a ton of information, too. I really enjoyed it. Anybody else wants to get a hold of Ralph? He's on the Twitter. And yeah. Give him a thanks so he'll get more into social media, you know?
I'll try anyways. I can't promise I'll have the time, but... being busy is good.
And if any of you guys are just starting out in your computer repair business, maybe you don't have a website, maybe you're not sure of exactly what you're going to be fixing, at podnuts.com/deals, there's a lot of specials going on with different computer repair videos. There's a website builder, just all kinds of help that you can get to start your business and or expand your business. So check out podnuts.com/deals. Well, thank you very much, Ralph. This is show number 344. Thanks, everybody, for listening tonight, and those in the chat room appreciate that, too.
See you later. Thank you.
Music for Podnuts Daily brought to you by Evan King at Pure Vodka
Desk. So when you guys call...